Ray Metcalf spent years working to direct reporters and the public to alleged corruption and questionable connections between political figures and business interests. He did some of that during his tenure as a Republican state legislator, then formed his own moderate Republican Party. Now he's running for the U.S. Senate as a Democrat, but says he mirrors the ideas of independent Senator Bernie Sanders. If Alaskans vote to send him to Congress, who would he caucus with? We'll find out as U.S. Senate candidate Democrat Ray Metcalf joins us today for Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline and its operations today and into the future.
Alaska has one of the highest suicide rates in the nation, but together we can change that one life at a time. The Statewide Suicide Prevention Council has the resources and training to prevent suicide and support healing for individuals in need. Be the one to ask if someone is thinking about suicide and connect them to help. Visit StopSuicideAlaska.org to learn more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. Do party labels matter? If they do, what do you get when you run under the flag of an established party? We've been tossing those questions around, and our guest today has experience running on both sides of the aisle and maybe even in between. Welcome, Mr. Ray Metcalf.
Good morning, Lori.
Thanks so much for being here. You also, out there in radio land, can join us if you have questions for candidate Metcalf. Call 1-800-478-8255 statewide, 1-800-478-8255 or 478-TALK. If you're calling in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Mr. Metcalf, as I said in the open, you've been a Republican, a moderate Republican. Now you're a Democrat, but you've told the state Democratic Party thanks, but no thanks for help. So why run as a Democrat if you're not sort of feeling the love for the party?
Oh, actually, I think you got that backwards. The party told me thanks, but no thanks. I won. I had a viable, qualified, excellent opponent in the primary, Alaska leader. He's a professor at the university. He's got a law degree. He's got several other degrees. He used to be the mayor of Seward. Highly qualified person. I didn't spend a dime in the primary. I don't think he did either. And I won 39 of the 40 election districts. And I won them by a wide margin. There were three people on the ballot. The Libertarian took a small portion. Between the two of them, they took 50% or 49%. I took 51% approximately. But of the Democratic votes cast, I took 60% and won 39 House districts. So that's a landslide by anybody's measure. And if you stop and think about it, it's the choice of the rank and file, and it's the goodwill that I have from those people who remember the exposure of Bill Allen's bribery of your legislators, and all of that stuff. I brought about a major event in Alaska, one of the biggest events since statehood, which was about 100 agents coming up here from the FBI and participating in a raid that served 23 search warrants, put six legislators behind bars, put Bill Allen and his top hand behind bars and a couple lobbyists behind bars. You know, that was a big deal. And the consequence of that was that we got a revised statute on taxes, and everything I said was proven to be true. All of a sudden, we had tons of money rolling in, and we saved up $16 billion before the oil companies managed to buy back your legislators. And so now we're broke, or going broke, because we're spending down that $16 billion. But that $16 billion wouldn't be there if Vico had not been busted for bribing your legislators. So
back to the party.
Yes.
What's the relationship like now? As you said, you clearly won the primary. You are the Democratic nominee. What's the relationship?
You know, the way I define it is this. There are two kinds of Democrats. And there are Democrats that want to end the pay-to-play game for the other guys, and there are Democrats who want to end the pay-to-play game for everybody. And, you know, you kind of have to follow the money. And the money is the source of financing for parties, for candidates. We sell access. That's how we finance campaigns. And I have been just as equally, I've been an equal opportunity exposure. If it's a Democrat that's, in my opinion, on the take, I stand up and say so and show you why. If it's a Republican that is, in my opinion, on the take, I stand up and show say so and show you why I believe so. And there are, frankly, the leadership of the Democratic Party right now, the ones that are in control of the purse strings, wish I'd be quiet about a couple of Democrats that I don't think deserve to be reelected to anything.
So the relationship with the party is not, is what? How would you characterize it?
Well, I have support within the party. I was a member of the Central, I'm still a member of the Central Committee, much to the displeasure of certain people in the top of the party. And I was on the executive committee of the Democratic Party for two terms, over 3 years. And, you know, when we went to the state convention, the Bernie faction, we took 82% of the vote. And it was stop and think about it. You know, Bernie Sanders urged Bernie supporters to unload what he thinks is of a rigged system, leadership supporting a rigged system, and to put Bernie people in. How does a party, how does it the same people are still in control of the purse strings, even though the Bernie faction had 82%? And the only answer I can give you is somebody cheated.
Back to the relationship. Are you getting any support? You mentioned that some of the people within the party structure are supporting you. How about financially, or is there any kind of coordination going on between you and the party?
No, the party has not offered me any. You know, the people in control of the purse strings are the people who wish I'd go away. So,
they did offer support, would you take it?
I would, if they offered support, yes. Now there's some endorsements that I would there are certain Democrats who, if they were to offer their endorsement, I'd decline because I think they're part of the problem.
Why did you decide to get on that ticket then? Why not run as an independent or a non-affiliated? Why pick a party, especially if there's kind of a chilled relationship between the two?
Well, I'm trying to change the party. I'm trying to improve the party. I want to create a party where people can look at it and say, you know, those guys are trying to do the right thing. I want to see a party that people believe will be honest in their dealings, clean, honest, ethical government. You know, we should be doing things. For example, I had a good deal of party support for an initiative that effectively would have made it a crime to pay back your contributors from the state treasury. And I had some degree of party support for this. And there were votes on it within the Central Committee, supporting votes. And we got this initiative off the ground. We were going to try to get it on the ballot. When we were about two-thirds of the way there, the existing leaders on the executive committee, not all of them, but enough of them to pull the rug out from under us, stopped us because they are wedded with the pay-to-play game. You know, in other words, under our current system of government, under our current system of supporting candidates, you know, there's not a legislator in Juneau that doesn't have a relationship with somebody who they take good care of, and they expect that group, person, entity to take good care of them at election time. You know, it's I call it the sugar daddy. Everybody has a sugar daddy, and that should just, that's wrong. It should change, and I'm trying to change that. And it runs contrary to the system we have. And you know, the good old boy system is threatened by me. The legislators, both on the right and the left, their source of financing is threatened by me, and the people they take care of is threatened by me. I have given dozens of contributions over my lifetime, but I've never asked for anything in exchange. And that's the kind of way I think we should support campaigns.
If you're just joining us, this is an extra edition of Talk of Alaska. We have U.S. Senate candidate, Democrat Ray Metcalf in the studio, and you can join our conversation if you have questions for Mr. Metcalf. The number statewide is 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. If you're in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Where have you been campaigning, and what are you hearing from Alaskans about what their biggest concerns are?
Well, one of the largest concerns is seeing your dividend cut in half and looking at an economic outlook that's looking pretty bleak. And, you know, I have been writing for years and years about getting a fair share from our oil. And both before and after VECO was busted and exposed for bribing legislators to give away your oil, bribing legislators to not tax oil at a fair rate. And, you know, you would think, you know, I've been proven correct by the mere fact that when that bust happened, it opened the door to get a much fairer tax. It wasn't anywhere near what we should have been getting, but it was better than what we're getting now and better than what we were getting before. And it resulted in a whole bunch of money flowing into the state treasury. I was right. They were giving away your oil. And there was a whole bunch of money left on the table that should have gone to the state treasury. And so, you know, those are concerns that people are raising. They're worried about the future. And, you know, right now the dividend was cut in half. I disagree with that decision. I think that we're leaving about $3 billion on the table this year that we don't need to, that the oil companies are making. They're making more money off of Alaska's oil than they're making anywhere else. They don't make that kind of money around the world. That, you know, back to Senate Bill 21. You may remember Senate Bill 21. That was kind of the day that we lost what was known as ACES. That was in place for 6 years, and then they passed Senate Bill 21. Well, I initiated the petition to reverse that, and the oil company spent $16 million fighting us. And as the oil prices come back up today, you know, when that was going on, ConocoPhillips reported a $32 per barrel profit from their Alaska oil. Now, what that means is all expenses paid plus $32 a barrel. That's what they got. So cost plus $32 a barrel is what they were making here. When that was going on, British Petroleum signed a contract halfway around the world to produce oil for $2 a barrel plus cost. And ConocoPhillips signed a contract halfway around the world to produce oil for $4 a barrel plus cost. And Shell signed a contract halfway around the world to produce oil for $1.35 plus cost. And Exxon signed a contract to produce oil for $1.90 plus cost. Here, they were getting $30 a barrel plus cost. You know, Alaskans don't know this. And right now, you know, if you remember, they were saying, oh, we're going to move to North Dakota where there's a better deal. And then the price of oil fell. Well, guess what happened in North Dakota? Those rigs shut down. They didn't shut down the North Slope. It was still profitable. So clearly they lied. The marketplace has proven that was not true. And
So what would be the equitable, in your estimation, You were talking about other development in other places in the world where they're getting less profit per barrel, but we don't also know what the development costs may be compared to what they are in Alaska or in other places in the world. So that's got to be part of the equation. In Alaska, what do you think the companies, what would be fair for them to make profit? Because that's what companies do. They need to make a profit to in order to do other things. What's the equitable right approach for Alaska getting the proper amount for their oil, but also making sure that companies will continue to invest and look for more oil here?
Well, you know, the key to getting more companies up here is to open up the, in other words, make sure that everybody has access to the pipeline, everybody has access to the feeder lines. And the, you know, the big three have locked everybody out as much as they're able. And, you know, you said they have to make a profit. Well, you know, all of these systems where they tax or whatever, no matter how you get your money as a state, there's one common thread between all tax regimes. And that is how much we know how much it costs to get the oil out of the ground. Well, in Alaska, we don't know because they hide the numbers from us. But in most cases, we know how much it costs to get the oil out of the ground and deliver. And anything above that that it sells for is profit. Well, in most cases, the oil companies get $2 to $4 of that anywhere in the world. And the owner keeps the rest. Here, we do the reverse of that. We get a couple bucks, and the oil companies keep the rest. And we've been bamboozled into believing that that's the way things are supposed to be.
If you're just joining us, this is an extra edition of Talk of Alaska. Our guest today is U.S. Senate Democrat candidate Ray Metcalf in the studio. You can join our conversation at 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. In Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Going back to, just for a moment, to the issue with the Democratic Party, and then I want to return to our discussion about resource development. If you had said that if they offered support, you would take that.
Yes.
From the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Did you, though, at one point in time say, no, thanks, I don't really want you in?
No, that would be, you know, there is a database that you get use of, and it's called Vote Builder, and it's nationwide. And in Alaska, the folks that hold the purse strings to the party here charge way, way, way more for access. They have the ability to govern how much to charge for that. And I think the price for a U.S. Senate candidate is $10,000. And, you know, I'll be lucky if I spend 20 before this campaign's over. So the cost of that program is almost prohibitive, and frankly, it helps pay the salary of people who would like to cut my throat. So why would I do it? And I have all kinds of contacts all over the state of Alaska. I have tons of data of my own that I've accumulated over the years. So I would have, and they could have contributed that too. That's within their purview to contribute that amount of money to the U.S. Senate campaign. So they want me to buy in and pay the salary, help pay the salary of people who would, who are effectively supporting one of my opponents.
So you're running as a Democrat, but not really feeling part of the system.
Not feeling the love.
All right. Well, let's move on. But, let's move on to other things.
But I say that with a grain of salt. It's only the people at the top. I clearly, absolutely have the support of the rank and file.
We were talking about oil and what makes sense for Alaska for development. But beyond oil, Alaska has been an oil-dependent state heavily dependent on oil revenue for decades. The future looks different when it comes to what resources may be developed and how a younger demographic may see fossil fuel extraction. Renewables are on the rise. There was a BBC report just the other day about the explosion over the last couple of years in renewable energy coming online across the world. What do you think the future should look like when it comes to resources in Alaska, development of both fossil fuels and renewables? What should our economic base look like in a decade from now?
You know, oil isn't going to go away, and taking ourselves out of the picture isn't going to help. You know, as long as the oil is the primary source of fuel, we should produce our oil. And yes, I'm in favor of weaning the world off of fossil fuels, and I'm in favor of bringing about renewable energy sources. However, here's the catch. In the meantime, you know, I was at AFN. One of the things I told the young people at the AFN was, the next time somebody comes to you and says, give me access to your resources and I'll give you jobs, you look them in the eye and say, I checked the world market value of my resources that you want access to. And if you'll pay me what they're worth, I'll put that in the bank and I'll go to college. I won't need a job.
All right. So there's a lot of subsidy that goes into both on the state and federal side. There's subsidies that go to the fossil fuel industry. There's also subsidies that go to renewable energy. What should that mix be?
Subsidies are a part of policy to promote something. And frankly, the oil companies don't need any subsidies. In fact, they need to start paying their fair share, and they're not. You might ask, you know, you're probably wondering, you know, what does this have to do with U.S. Senate, things that would take place in the U.S. Senate? This really boils down to a culture of corruption, and it's not just Alaska, it's nationwide. And if this culture of corruption didn't exist, the oil companies would be getting a fair return on their investment, and the state of Alaska would be getting the rest. And we wouldn't have financial problems. We this year, I was speaking in Fairbanks with some people that have very in-depth inside information of what's going on in the North Slope. And by the way, you know, the fall in oil prices proved beyond the shadow of a doubt the lowest cost production in North America is coming off the North Slope. And we've been being lied to about the costs, these exorbitant costs, for years. But the marketplace has proven that wasn't true. And the folks I spoke with in Fairbanks that do have in-depth knowledge said their estimation of the actual cost of production and delivery is about $27. And I suspect that's probably right. It comports with what I know. And by the way, I've spent the past 30 years studying oil production costs and profits. So I have a pretty good idea what's going on. And so there's about $20 per barrel coming off in profits coming out of here now. And in any other country in the world, they'd be getting 2 to 4 of those, and we'd be getting 16 to 18 of those.
Let's go to the phones. Andy is in Dillingham and does not want to talk about oil. He wants to talk about the Magnuson-Stevens Act. Hi, Andy.
Yeah, my question is, you look at the CDQ corporations here, and they split 10% of the harvest of the Bering Sea, and they have hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars in the bank. The coastal villages didn't run their plant this year, wouldn't help with the ice machine down there. They couldn't have a fishery. We still had millions of pounds of pink salmon and silver salmon go up the rivers with no major processors to process them here. Yet I've got Chinese contacts and friends I've met in the last 5 years in Asia that would be more than happy to come in and buy every one of these fish, freeze them whole in the round, and take them home. Yet we can't seem to get anything done out here, having worked on this for over 20 years. when they reauthorize this Magnuson-Stevens Fisheries Act, would you be open to taking a real good look at it and maybe making some changes in that? And you could even look at that as another source of funding. I think that if oil, gas, mining, timber, tourism, fisheries, everybody kicked in 10-12%, well, then there'd be enough money. We could have several dividends if we wanted to.
Well, I agree with everybody kicking in, and you know, I won't pretend to be a fisheries expert. I'm not. I'm an oil and gas. I am an oil and gas. I consider myself an oil and gas expert. I would like to see the profits from our fish be distributed as widely as possible, as locally as possible, and as Alaskan as possible. And so, yes, I have friends that in Dillingham. I have friends in Kodiak who have shared their ideas with me along the same lines that you've just outlined here. And yes, I think the Magnuson-Stevens Act needs to be reauthorized, but I think it needs some changes.
All right, Andy. Thank
you.
All right. Thanks so much for the call. We have an email question here from Robert, who says, has Mr. Metcalf reached out to the now rebranded Bernie Sanders campaign, Our Revolution, for assistance if the Alaska Democrats are not being supportive?
Yes, and I'm in communication with Our Revolution. I'm, in fact, we had a kickoff for Our Revolution here in Anchorage, and we put it together at a local restaurant and invited all kinds of people, took names, sent them down, and yes, we've been active with Our Revolution.
He has a second question. What would your thoughts be about a state-run oil company?
You know, one of the biggest mistakes this state ever made was, frankly, made by Tony Knowles. When ARCO sold to BP, we should have bought it. If we had bought it, we would, you know, there would be no more confusion about what the cost of production was up on the North Slope. We would, and we wouldn't be broke today. And yes, we, and by the way, we are the largest oil producer I know of in the world that does not own an oil company. You know, Canada has interest in oil companies. Norway has interest in oil companies. Saudi Arabia owns an oil company. You know, are we not as smart as them? I think we should have an oil company.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue this extra edition of Talk of Alaska with U.S. Senate Democrat candidate Ray Metcalf in the studio today as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports and provide services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska. When passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. Safety information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Our guest today for this extra edition of Talk of Alaska is U.S. Senate candidate, Democrat Ray Metcalf. The number statewide to call if you'd like to join our conversation, if you have questions for the candidate, you can call 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. And in Anchorage, you can call 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. We're going to go back to the phones. Rick is in Soldotna. Hi, Rick.
Hi there.
Did you have a question?
Yes. Well, a question and a statement. My question is this.
why, when society in general talks about logical applications for business practices here, but yet our legislature seem to always go in the opposite direction. I mean, we've had talk about being scammed out of our resources, like what has just been discussed. You know, we're the only state where they get more out of us than any other country. Why is that? Why are we so able to be scammed? Thanks.
Well, thanks for the call, Rick. I mean, that makes an assumption that we're being scammed, and I don't know that that's something that we can say with certainty, as the caller indicated. And I know that that's your feeling about this as well, Mr. Metcalf.
You know, Alaskans would be, if we had gotten from the 18 billion barrels we've produced, what other countries have gotten from their 18 billion barrels, if we had shared the profits in the same manner, we would have about 250 billion. If we'd spent what we spent, plus taken the additional funds and put them into permanent fund, it would be about $250 billion right now. We wouldn't have a problem when the oil ran out, because you could take 5% of that a year, and that'd be $12.5 billion. You know, we have been scammed. Somewhere in a tower in London is a little playbook, and one of the chapters tells you about how to fleece a small society and relieve it of its resources and leave nothing behind. And we have been the victim of that. What you do to do that is you give a hospital a nice little room and you put your name on it. Make some grants here and there to rich people. We've been scammed.
Well, I don't want to, I'm certainly not defending the oil industry, but I want to take us down this path a little bit about what it costs to do any sort of work in Alaska. We are a long way from manufacturers of steel and other pieces of equipment that have to be supplied for any industry. It's why we don't have a manufacturing base here.
You're talking about the giant red herring, because, you know, the marketplace has proven one thing to be correct. The lowest cost production in North America is coming off the North Slope, and here's why. A, the volume is enormous from one field, and B, it is being shipped by a pipeline and tankers that were paid for back in 1982. I mean, it's just, you know, the entire system has it. The money coming from the system pays all the costs of the system, and then there's money left over. And that money left over is being sent to BP. It's being sent to Exxon. It's being sent to ConocoPhillips. They don't bring money here. BP Alaska runs the field. They take a portion of their proceeds and they put it back into the field to keep the field going. But they have an excess, and that excess goes to BP International, and it's huge. You know, Exxon invested a couple things you might want to think about. Exxon invested a tiny amount of money, a few million dollars, but they bought an enormous interest in what came. They've never produced a barrel of oil. They have minority interests in other fields that are run by other companies, and they collect big checks constantly. They've made billions.
Let's go back to the phones, and we only have about 25 minutes left, and I'd certainly like to talk about other issues beyond oil. You're running for U.S. Senate. You're not running for state office. It seems as if we need to shift the focus a little more broadly. But let's go to the phones for a moment and talk to Shelley in Anchorage. Hi, Shelley.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call today. I just wanted to call in and comment and take issue with Mr. Metcalf and his assertion that the Democratic Party within the state of Alaska is fundamentally corrupt, and our system of government is fundamentally corrupt, and, you know, that there's some sort of like a democracy run amok happening. I think perhaps, and the only person that I have heard discussing certain individuals or things like that so far is Mr. Metcalf. I'm not involved in any leadership way with the Democratic Party in Alaska at all, but I am a Democrat. And I would urge Mr. Metcalf to remember that Democrats in this state are Democrats because they believe in the principles. They're not simply on the take, and we're not naive sheep being led to the slaughter by our party leaders. We are people who believe passionately in the principles of the party, and you're discounting, when you say things like you said, you are discounting the hundreds and thousands of hours of volunteers who have put in their time behind candidates and people that they believe in. So I would urge caution, and I would hope that you would not echo the same things that Mr. Trump has echoed during this this political season, and really fundamentally try to undermine the most important system that we have in our country, which is the way that we elect our leadership. So I'll take any response offline, and I appreciate the opportunity to say what I wanted to say.
All right. Thanks for the call, Shelley. Your response?
Yeah, Shelley, you know, I wouldn't be a Democrat if I didn't believe in the fundamental principles of the Democratic Party. You know, everything that the Democratic Party says they stand for, I support. In fact, I'll qualify that a little bit. I am 100% behind the Bernie Sanders agenda. And when Bernie was running for office, I was working on his campaign, and by the leadership here in Alaska, there were communications that were exposed by WikiLeaks, and I was identified as part of the Bernie insurgency within the Democratic Party. And the person that that communication was with Debbie Wasserman Schultz's office in D.C. And when the dust settled from the exposures of WikiLeaks, you know, Debbie Wasserman Schultz was forced to resign. The people that were here in Alaska, they shored up their bases and held on to the purse strings and control the party. So, you know, that should tell you something. I think that Bernie Sanders would be the nominee if Debbie Wasserman Schultz hadn't had her finger on the scale, had they not been cheating just a little bit along the way. And that cheating still going on right here by the same people. They didn't quit, but Debbie Wasserman Schultz did quit. But they were all part of the same game. They had their thumb on the scale.
Well, I think part of what the caller was trying to get at, though, was the fundamental issue of our system of voting and being clear about the fact that it is not rigged. There is not widespread voter fraud. And she mentioned the Republican side of the ticket, the Trump campaign making those statements, and the threat to basic democracy about our system. What are your thoughts about that, about making sure that people still engage and do exercise their right and their civic duty to vote?
Yeah, I don't think that the election between for the Hillary Trump outcome, I don't think that's rigged. I don't think that the state's elections are rigged. I don't think there's widespread vote fraud. However, if you look at the nominating process for Bernie Sanders, you had superdelegates and, you know, just all kinds of things going on that went on in the nominating process that clearly should not have been going on. The cheating was caught over and over and over. And it was exposed by, you know, that Debbie Wasserman Schultz had an obligation to be a neutral player. And she was not. And it was demonstrated by her own emails between Kay Brown here in Alaska and Washington, D.C. And they were opposed to Bernie Sanders, and they were opposed to me.
If you're just joining us, this is an extra edition of Talk of Alaska. Our guest today is U.S. Senate candidate, Democrat Ray Metcalf. You can join the conversation at 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. In Anchorage, the number is 550-8422. 550-8422, or you can email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Let's go back to the phones. Jackie is in Ketchikan. Hi, Jackie.
Hi. First, I want to thank Mr. Metcalf for all the good work he's done. Thank you so much. I really commend you for that hard and very difficult work. I think that what's happening in Alaska is that you will be splitting the vote with Margaret Stock, from Democrats. I've been talking to an independent voters, and I'm wondering what you think of the instant runoff method of voting that I know it was voted on in Alaska many years ago, but I understand that the bill was flawed. But that's where you probably know what it is, but I'm going to explain for the audience that that's where you vote your first choice, second choice, third choice, depending on how many candidates are running. And if your first choice is clearly not the winner, then your second choice gets thrown into the mix as if it were your first choice. And in that case, of course, when Arlister Juluski and Tony Knowles and Walter Hickel were running against each other, Walter Hickel clearly would not have won that race because he was supported by 38% of the population. So that, and I'm also wondering what you think of the idea of instead of there being campaign contributions, because I know that we agree that we've got to get money out of politics. I was also a Bernie Sanders supporter, and one way to do that was if people had to get signatures from their area, and they had to get enough signatures in order to get on the ballot, and then once they get on the ballot, then the state would actually fund their campaign. So I wanted to get your take on that, and I will get your answer offline.
All right, Jackie, thanks for the call. Mr. Metcalf.
Yeah, Jackie, I'm a big supporter of instant runoff. I think the way that we hold elections should change. And, anybody that pays attention to international politics, I use Egypt as an example. There were five people running. They had a dictator-type person running on one end and a fundamentalist running on the other end of the scale. And you had three people in the middle who would have, any of the three would have been very acceptable to the majority of the society. And what happened was the three people in the middle split the vote in the primary, and none of them had... they had 52% of the vote between themselves, but they came in last. So the person on the far left and the far right both had 24%. So then you have two people running against each other in a runoff that 75% of the people don't want. And so you wind up with a choice of people that, no matter who you get, you're going to have a major portion of the society, a majority of your society doesn't want them. And so that's why instant runoff should happen. If you had an instant runoff, you would wind up with the people in the middle, the people that had the most support. So, yes. And as far as getting the dirty money out of politics, so to speak, if we simply made it a crime to fail to recuse oneself from the vote when the legislation on the table either gives an economic advantage to or delivers an appropriation to one of one's contributors, if a legislator had to recuse themselves from that vote, then there'd be no point in corporations funding or helping fund campaigns. And if that were to happen, a lot of your funding, the way we fund the legislation races today would change, and public funding might be a lot more attractive.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Renee is in Esther. Hi, Renee.
Yeah, good morning. Hey, you spent a little bit of time talking about either overt or implied corruption or questionable deals in the oil industry here over the last several decades, and sometimes decisions being made that aren't in the best interest of the people who are supposedly represented. And parallel to that, and decades old, going back to Eisenhower, who I believe used the term the military-industrial complex, we have a Pentagon that I don't think has ever been thoroughly audited. I've read reports of $8 trillion unaccounted for dollars. I know if I bounced my budget that bad, I'd hear about it. $8 trillion unaccounted for dollars. We see things where line items where if you break it down, we're sometimes paying outrageous amounts for relatively simple items. Years ago, $169 for a bolt on an F-16. I've heard $800 for a toilet seat on a C-17, $600 for a DOD claw hammer, and so on. I think the same sorts of things go on there. And up here, we're getting F-35s that have been criticized for not flying properly in the cold, you know, so let's put them in the Arctic, right? And on and on. And there seems to be this practice, like we're still subscribing to this myth of trickle-down economics of, well, we'll pursue these things as a community, we'll bring the F-35s in, and after all, we'll get, you know, houses filled up and lessen a little bit of the tax burden. But these things are billions and billions, if not trillions of dollars. With this kind of game run amok, it seems, for 60, 70 years now in the Pentagon, what do you propose be done there where, right now, as I understand it, there's no law prohibiting Congress people from being invested in DOD contractors and benefiting while they sit in the same chair that has the authority to vote for military action and or contracts?
So you want to know if Mr. Metcalf goes to Congress,
What would he propose to address these things?
All right. Thank you, Renee, for the question.
Thank you.
Mr. Metcalf.
Well, Renee, if elected, my number one priority will be to secure legislation requiring public officials to declare a conflict of interest and recuse themselves from voting on legislation appropriating cash, public resources, or competitive advantages to themselves, their family, their employers, their business partners, or their contributors. This wouldn't be applicable to widely distributed appropriations. In other words, somebody voting on the distribution of dividends, that's not an issue. But it's when you have a personal interest, and that personal interest can be due to a contribution. In other words, if the industrial military complex donates a lot of money to you, and then they send their lobbyist in to remind you why they donated to you and remind you that they want the F-35 funded or whatever they want, that process needs to be changed. In other words, if the builders of the F-35 gave me money to help me get elected, they should be barred from sending their lobbyist, or I should be barred from voting for the F-35. I should have to stand down and say the folks that are building this helped me with campaign money. I should have to stand up on the Senate floor and say, I'm sorry, I have to recuse myself. And, you know, anybody that thinks that radical, it was the rule in 1801 written by Thomas Jefferson.
All right. On that note, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with U.S. Senate candidate Democrat Ray Metcalf.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Our guest today on this extra edition of Talk of Alaska is U.S. Senate candidate Democrat Ray Metcalf. We are going to go back to the phones. Susan is in Fairbanks. Hi, Susan.
Hello.
Do you have a question?
My question is, having been first a Republican and then a so-called moderate Republican and now a Democrat, is Mr. Metcalf prepared to support fully the Democratic ticket for president, vice president, and down the line? Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Susan. Thanks for the call. Mr. Metcalf?
Yeah, yes, Susan. I've been a Democrat for over a decade. So I've been a Democrat a long time. And, I'm a Democrat because I generally believe in Democratic principles. I was, although I was a hardcore Bernie supporter, I'm highly disappointed that he didn't win. I will follow his advice. And I'm not an enthusiastic Hillary supporter, but I will vote for her.
All right. Thanks for that question, Susan, and for your answer. I wanted to get onto some other issues. You were at AFN, the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention in Fairbanks last week, and were on a panel there with other Senate candidates. What are your thoughts about land into trust? That was a big part of the conversation during AFN. It has been a big part of the conversation in Alaska Native communities for quite some time. They have the pathway to do that now, to apply for land into trust. The state has stepped out of the way as far as challenging that, although they have said that they may challenge some applications in the future. There is at least one application that's in now in public. It's for a one-acre parcel in Craig for the tribe there to take their tribal administration building on this acre into trust. What are your thoughts generally about land into trust and Alaska tribes having the ability to do that?
I think they ought to be able to do that. And I would, you know, there might be instances where the state would have some concerns, but in general, I think they should be able to do that.
And the issue of law enforcement in rural Alaska, that's part of this discussion as well. Land into trust, the tribes have said that, you know, if they can sort of deepen that relationship with the federal government, then they can address some of their own legal requirements, their law enforcement requirements themselves. Your thoughts about what's needed in that respect for law enforcement in rural Alaska?
You know, there was a presentation that was given at the AFN, and it was by the lady that heads up the VPSO program. And I don't remember the exact number, but it was only a small minority of villages that had VPSOs. And occasionally VPSOs visit villages that don't have a regular VPSO, and they learn a lot about things that were going on that shouldn't have been going on when they were there. And your likelihood of being a victim of crime in the villages is way, way, way higher than the likelihood here in urban Alaska. I knew that, but I didn't. I was surprised by how dramatic the difference is. We're in for some hard times. The state of Alaska's in for some hard times. And any way you slice it, we're in for some hard times. And, you know, the services out in the rural areas are already way less than they should be. You know, can you imagine living without services without law enforcement services? Nowhere to turn when you've been a victim of a crime. They need ways to deal with that. And tribal recognition. You need local control, and however we get there, those villages need to have a handle of local control, and they need to have a structure to receive funding for in the ability to decide how to provide services for themselves, because the state's not going to provide services, you know, to stand in the way of them providing their own services. That's just wrong.
So what would the federal government's role be in that? If you were to go to the U.S. Senate, what would you advocate for to help these communities in rural Alaska?
The Secretary, I believe Secretary of Interior, already has signed off on tribal recognition of, 229.
Been in place for a long time, that there's been this federal recognition of tribes in Alaska. Now they have the pathway to land into trust, which opens a different door. What would you advocate for addressing law enforcement and infrastructure in rural Alaska in Congress?
I would advocate being able to, we need a mechanism of providing funds for them to create their own infrastructure. We need a mechanism of providing funds to create their own law enforcement, and tribal courts. We should make use of tribal courts. I'm in favor of the villages rising up and taking charge of their own lives.
Rural Alaska, as is the entire state, is seeing climate change much faster than many places in the nation and in the world. The coastal communities are seeing these impacts very dramatically. What we've only got a couple of minutes left, but what do you think Congress should do? If you were in the U.S. Senate, what would you work to do to address the issue of climate change?
Well, one, I'd bring some U.S. senators up here to take a look at the eroding villages and houses falling off into the ocean because there's no longer ice protecting the shores. You know, you kind of need to see that firsthand to, you know, get a grasp, you know, where are these people going to, you know, how are they going to survive? And, you know, who profited from adding all these gases to our atmosphere that are leading us to global warming? Who profited? And did they, you know, they became billionaires, many of them. And so the people who created the problem, not that we didn't all create the problem to a degree, but the people who created the problem should pay for the problem.
What would that look like? What are you suggesting?
Well, you cannot abandon them to collapsing into the sea. You need to come to their rescue, just like you would come to the rescue of people in a hurricane or a flood.
But when you talk about the people that created the problem, from in your words, is that a tax then on the industry, or what would you propose?
Well, as far as a tax on the industry, stop the subsidies and get a fair share from the proceeds. You know, these are resources are commonly owned everywhere in the world except some places in the lower 48. You know, Canada, you don't own subsurface minerals. Mexico, you don't own subsurface minerals. Nowhere in Europe do you own subsurface minerals. Nowhere in Alaska except native land, they own subsurface minerals. But the 3 million acres that we got, that came with subsurface minerals that belong to the state. And we have effectively, you know, if I guess one way to describe it is, if you are selling a house and you have, and it's worth $200,000, and you are, you don't give your real estate broker a bigger boost because your equity's high, he gets the same. And we are giving away our equity and our resources. And we have enough money, should have enough money to fix these things.
We're going to have to leave it there. Thank you to my guest, U.S. Senate candidate Democrat Ray Metcalf. Next week on Talk of Alaska on Tuesday, we will have incumbent Republican candidate Lisa Murkowski as on Talk of Alaska. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Lori Townsend.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by
Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. And by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.